Hello, greetings, my friends. It's John St. Germain broadcasting live from Knoxville, Tennessee, beautiful Chateau St. Germain. And a good happy summer to you. May you swelter amicably in whatever steamy corner of the summer universe you happen to be in. As for me, I'm very happy. I saw a sign today that said you could get deep fried banana pudding on a stick. Now, that's not Southern. I don't know what is. And that just leads us to our topic tonight, health, as taught by Claude Alexander Conlon and other advocates of New Thought. We're going to segue from there and do some updating of that. We're going to talk about ways to be healthy, maintain your health. As you know, health has a spirituality to it. So grab your crystal balls, grab your barbells if you have them, grab your thigh masters, and by golly, we'll be back in just a few minutes. So don't sleep. Back. We love you. Bye-bye. We'll come back in a minute. John St. Germain, Crystal Silence League Hour, brought to you by LMC Radio Network and folks at Lucky Mojo Curio Company. Crystal Silence League, of course, was founded around 1917 or so by Claude Alexander Conlon with the purpose of disseminating good thought and prayer to those in need. And in those days, this was distributed through the Crystal Ball Network. Mr. Conlon provided crystal balls to all members of the Crystal Silence League. Prayers were communicated to Mr. Conlon via postcard and letter. Today, of course, you can find us at www.crystalsilenceleague.org on the World Wide Web, and we get literally hundreds of prayers a day posted. Prayer is always free at the Crystal Silence League. You may purchase crystal balls from us, and you can also purchase literature, two books by Mr. Claude Alexander Conlon, $5 each, on the instruction of crystal ball use. You may also subscribe to our newsletter for free, edited by me, Reverend John St. Germain, and we also have this show that you can listen to on Blog Talk Radio. We're archived. We have podcasts that you can get, as well as our other programs. We'll be talking about the lineup of our other LMC Radio Network programs later. Every night of the week, you can listen to our broadcasts. It is our custom at the beginning of every show to read aloud some of the prayers that are posted. I download and print out these prayers. All the pastors, by the way, of Crystal Silence League do print out prayers, and we pray over them on our altars every day, each and every day. And we also, three times a day, send out tonics. I've been corrected. We do not have shows on Fridays. Fridays are day off. We do have two shows on Tuesday. So I stand corrected. Thank you for that, Nagasiva. We do not have shows on Fridays, but we have shows every day of the week, two shows on Tuesday, no shows on Friday. I believe we're trying to find something for that spot on Friday, though. So at some point, we'll dominate the blog spot cybersphere. We download these prayers. We also, three times a day, send out spiritual tonics. We send out positive affirmations for all those who wish to receive them. You receive these, of course, via crystal ball. So I will now read aloud some of these prayers for the next few minutes. And if you'd like to join me in these, by all means, do so, wishing these folks answers. to the prayers and comfort thereof. I only identify these by prayer number and initials. Anonymity is protected. So let's get started. Prayer ID number 39814 AM, who prays for gainful employment and a dollar amount, $3,000 or more monthly to meet the living expenses, and prays for this abundance to come to him or her fairly quickly because they need that money to get by. We also have prayer ID number 39813 JG, who needs spiritual bonding to have a good marriage and children to talk and see each other within a week. These are very specific prayers. Prayer ID number 39812 SS needs, who has financial woes, many financial woes. The son's father refuses to help, and the creditors are upon her. Please pray for financial deliverance for her ASAP. Prayer ID number 39811 MW needs protection from danger. He and his brothers need protector from danger in the struggles of society. Prayer ID number 39810 AM needs a decision to be made in the family so that they can move forward. May their paralysis be broken. May they move forward. May they lift the anchor. Prayer ID number 39809 SL. They need money so that they can move. Prayer ID number 39808 H or EH was in a car accident, not at fault, and needs the paperwork accepted and needs for the insurance to rule in his favor. Prayer ID number 39807 KL needs financial blessings. Needs to sell the house, get a new car, and rebuild the savings. They should be financially blessed. Prayer ID number 39806 FR prays for the many wrongful evictions in her area to be that were motivated by greed to be decided by divine justice and higher power to be rectified. She prays for justice. Prayer ID number 39805 NB needs a job and very quickly. Prayer ID number 39804 S needs to get this person who's interfering in the serenity of his life out of his life. Prayer ID number 39803 SS has a court date and needs for that to be ruled in her favor. The prayer ID number 39802 SS has family members who are attempting to work black magic on her and needs protection from these people. Prayer ID number 39801 HL needs to move into a larger apartment and needs the financial means in order to do this. And prayer ID number 39800 KEB needs a miracle in the form of money so she can assist her friends. And prayer ID number 39799 needs a financial miracle as well. Prayer ID number 39798 AT needs the money that she worked for and needs to make sure that the person who owes her pays her. And prayer ID number 39797 EC apparently had a stolen rental car and is in court and needs the situation to resolve itself. And finally, prayer ID number 39796 KL is in love with a certain man but had a misunderstanding and needs a second chance, and needs forgiveness. May all these prayers be considered by the higher power. May they find satisfaction, and may they find relief, and may they find love, and may they find what they need. May they find the blessings that they desire. And let's take a moment of silence for all those who are in need of prayer and in need of positive affirmation. crystal of the month, our crystal of the week, is coal. Jet black coal, just simple coal, very common. Coal is an interesting element. It's carbon, pressurized. It's usually vegetable matter that's been pressurized, and coal is a very useful crystal or stone or element to use. It is it violates one of the rules of crystallology, and that is it is like amber, and that is it is organic rather than it is an organic compound. It's a vegetable matter. You know, amber, one of the rules of crystal rules is that it be mineral. Coal and amber are organic and therefore don't follow into the category of real crystal, but coal nonetheless is useful in healing. Do you know how sometimes fear will paralyze you? There are many experiences are closed to you in life because you're afraid. A lot of this fear involves grief. Sometimes grief causes you to be afraid of things. You're afraid of losing. You're afraid of loss. You're afraid that something that happened before in the past is going to happen again. This involves loss. And coal, especially a certain type of coal, which is called jet, is an immensely useful element to use in healing grief. So a simple piece of coal, especially jet, which is lignite, is very useful in issues involving the root chakra, grounding you, helping you with issues involving fear, guilt, shame. When you find you can't move forward from these issues, when you find that you're afraid to enter things with that childlike sense of confidence, coal is the thing to do, and you can't find anything cheaper. In Victorian days, they used to take a highly polished piece of lignite, jet, coal, and use it for grieving. They'd mount it in silver. Can you imagine that? Coal mounted in silver, and it was used for grieving jewelry. And because it's jet black, you can't get anything blacker than that, really. And this helped people absorb the grief. I'll tell you about coal. You have to clean it off, and you have to discharge it often. It can be used similarly to obsidian, similarly to many black jewels. It can be a black egg even to go around the body and absorb negative energy, but you have to shake it off often. You have to clean it often, have to discharge it often. It's like a sponge. It will absorb that, and we'll talk more about that when we talk about crystal healing, how black stones and black crystals and black eggs can be used to absorb negative energy from you. But think in terms of grief, fear, paralysis, how to move forward, and think in terms of the root chakra, issues involving the root chakra, and coal is very useful for that. So it's very good for that sort of thing. Our issue today, our topic tonight, is healing, and we were reading last week from Mr. Claude Conlon's 1924 book, Inner Secrets of Psychology, volume 4 out of 5 volumes, More Health Essentials, and Psychology of Health, and we talked about chewing your food to get the maximum nutrients from it. And one thing you can say about our master, Mr. Conlon, he was nothing if not strong in his opinions. And I'd like to talk to you this week about a couple of things, and we'll talk a few things. This week, I want to talk to you about exercise. And I'm going to tell you that if you're on Farcebook at all, every week there's a new exercise challenge. The six-pack ab challenge was the one that I thought was very funny. They're challenging people to do more and more crunches, abdominal crunches, sit-ups to get a six-pack ab. And I want to clear that up because I know quite a bit about exercise. I do weightlifting and things like this. And the only way you get six-pack abs is to get 12% body fat. You can do crunches forever, and you're not going to get six-pack abs until you reduce your body fat to under 12%. You have to be cut. You have to be razored to get six-pack abs. You can do 5,000 crunches, And what that is going to do, if you do a lot of crunches, you're going to develop a slouch. It's going to ruin your posture. It shortens these muscles that connect your abdomen to your hips. And in yoga, that's considered very, very bad. You stretch those muscles in yoga so that you stand erect. So you don't want to do that. You do want to develop your core, and your core is your lower back and your abdomen. And if you do too many crunches to the neglect of your lower back, you're going to have back problems. So it's a very bad idea to do too many crunches. You won't develop six-pack abs. What you'll develop is back problems. And to get six-pack abs, you have to lower your body fat. You have to raise her down 12% body fat or less, and you'll have six-pack abs. It doesn't matter how many crunches you do. You're going to show muscle. So balance is the key in any kind of exercise. And I was very interested in how sensible exercise rules today have gone back to many of the rules that Mr. Collin discusses that he learned from yogis. So he opens this chapter. The fourth of the seven health essentials is given as healthy exercise and rest. Nature intends that man shall exercise his body. Man in his natural state needed no urge to exercise, for he obtained all the exercise he needed in his work of securing food and shelter and in protecting himself from his natural enemies. The artificial habits of life resulting from civilization, however, has deprived man of his natural exercise, hence he must seek it voluntarily and deliberately. And he goes on to discuss the science of exercise. And he talks about how without sufficient exercise, the muscles and tendons of the body become weak and flabby. We live in an era where obesity is the rule rather than the exception. I want to tell you that I was a fat kid, and I was one of two in my elementary school. I was one of two in my elementary school, and I took some razzing, and I eventually got over it. By the time I was in junior high, I was in much better shape. And the reason I was a fat kid was because my mom overfed me, and she had the hyperactive fork, as we called it. She comforted us with food when we were emotionally upset. She fed us. And we had typical Southern cooking. Crisco and Bisquick were the staples of our cooking. And bacon grease. There was always a can of bacon grease next to the stove. This is Southern cooking. You put bacon grease in everything. Good, healthy vegetables, you have to ruin them. You have to put bacon grease and pork fat in everything. You put pork fat in everything. You put pork fat in pork. If you cook pork, if you cooked ham, you put bacon grease in it. So, the standard Southern cooking, for those of you who don't live in the South, is a thing called biscuits and gravy. Basically, it's fried dough with pork fat mixed with dough poured over fried pork. So you have pork fat and Bisquick, basically, mixed with cream and pork fat and Bisquick poured over baked pork fat and Bisquick. It's enough to do it. And I visited one of my relatives recently, and was reminded of that, and all the men there were about my age, and every one of them had pacemakers and bypass surgeries and heart attacks. And looking at the feast that the family put together, I saw why. I was polite. I ate a small plate of it, but I realized if I ate a full plate of it, I'd have to go get my arteries scoured out. So what we're looking at is a society that the norm is unhealthy. The norm is unhealthy, so we have these exercise fads, the 7-minute workout, the 6-minute aerobic exercise. And however, there's been a return to sensibility, and I will tell you that the natural exercises that help the body are the ones that help to survive in primordial times. The ones that we used to survive, to quit, there were things that ate us back in primordial times. There were, we were not at the top of the food chain. There were things that ate us, saber-toothed tigers for one, that would eat us. They hunted us. And we developed certain senses, that prickling sensation between our shoulders when people stare at us. Rupert Sheldrake wrote a book about it, The Sense of Being Stared At. That's a leftover. You can do this. You can test it. Go in a restaurant or somewhere in public where it's reasonably quiet and stare at someone between their shoulder blades. And unless they're utterly sated with experience, they're on their cell phone or something, and they've completely destroyed their senses, they'll turn around and look at you. And this is a fact. you get this sense, crawling sense between your shoulder blades and someone's staring at you, this creepy feeling. That's when someone is walking behind you and they're stalking you and you get this feeling, I'm being followed. That was the sense that kept us alive, man. Saber-toothed tigers hiding in the bush looking at you, you run. So here's what you did. You ran, you squatted, you jumped, you grabbed a limb, you pulled yourself up. So the new rules of lifting, and this is a book I do recommend to you. It's called The New Rules of Lifting. There's six basic movements, and this is what the old strongmen in the 1800s and early 1900s, these guys were strongmen. They could pick up trains and stuff. Up into their 50s and 60s, they maintained their physiques. Eugene Sandow is someone you should Google. This guy was amazing, and he was an old man still doing this, and he didn't have rotator cuff tears and back problems or anything because they used the movements of nature that nature intended. They didn't use these weird isolation techniques. Isolating a muscle was something that the steroid freaks came out with. The idea of exercising muscles in isolation is unnatural. But there were six basic movements that they used, and the sensible exercise groups that use resistance training, which is weight training, recommends this. And these are the squat, the deadlift, the lunge, the push, the pull, and the twist. These use all the body major muscle groups in coordinated action, just as nature intended. And these are the same ones the old strongmen use, and these are the ones you use in nature. You squat, you deadlift, you pick something up, you lunge. This is a natural motion. You push, you pull, and you twist. These are all the things you use in nature to survive. This is what your body is designed to do. I will tell you that in this book written in 1924, these are the same things that Mr. Conlon talks about. Furthermore, I'll tell you, he talks about mindful exercise. Physical exercise, in order to be effective in proportion to the energy expended in it, must be along natural lines. The fancy physical culture systems fail to provide the desired result. As a rule, they're too artificial, and interest soon fails, and the exercises are dropped. Moreover, no physical exercise is truly efficient unless one throws mind into it. By throwing mind into the exercise, I mean the direction of the attention to the particular part of the body being exercised and the creation of a mental picture of that part being strengthened. It is a known fact of modern psychology that the circulation follows the attention, and the blood supply in any part of the body may be increased simply by directing the concentrated attention to that part. Moreover, the mental picture of the desired physical result tends to become materialized in physical form. This was rediscovered, by the way, in the 80s, that visualization increases athletic performance. It was here first, 1924. All that is required to send mind to the desired part is the will that has concentrated its energy there, coupled with a firm belief and faith that it will do so, and to give to this a positive form by the mental picture of the desired result being obtained. This method of throwing mind into the exercise may be applied in connection with any particular system of physical exercise that you may favor. The main thing in using any system of physical exercise is to throw your mind into it in the way that I have told you. This will add to the virtue of the exercise fully tenfold, maybe far more. This plan converts a dead system of exercise into a living series of actions. Now, he says tenfold or more. The studies done in the 70s and 80s with athletic performance said as much as 25%, and it can increase your performance up to 25%. I could tell you all kinds of studies. I could Google them and show them to you, but I remember there were people in the gym who they were bench pressing, and they couldn't break the 300-pound mark, so they loaded 310 pounds on the bar and told them it was 290, and they could do it. They were lifting 310 thinking it was 290. It was a mental barrier. And by thinking they were lifting 290, they were lifting 310. So you see, it's a mental barrier. Visualizing performance. There were guys that thought they invented this back in the 80s and 90s, and it had been way done long before this by New Thought. The other very important thing is that Mr. Conlon points out, and I'll tell you one thing about these writers, they don't get to the point. They tell you how important something is, and they'll tell you the importance of it, and they'll tell you the importance of it, but I may mention here also, this particular feature constitutes an important element of physical exercises performed by the Oriental teachers, the yogis and others. It's like a carny pitch, kind of. By means of it, they keep their bodies fit and are thus able to give the needed physical foundation for an active, strong mind. This important feature may be called stretching. It is nature's own way of exercising, which is followed instinctively, get this, by the animals and savage races. By that, I think he means people from Detroit, and which may well be relearned by civilized, quote-unquote, man. It will do more and better work for you, and with less labor and less time than any strenuous physical exercise system ever invented by man. He goes on to talk about the work of Mr. Walter Camp, who trained, he developed a series of exercises for people in the Navy during World War II, apparently, or World War I, I guess, since this was the 20s. He talks about how dogs and cats get up and stretch. Talk about how domesticated animals in the zoo don't exercise with weights and barbells, but they stretch against the bars of the cage. And he talks about how they're fitter than you. He says, lion and tiger and dog keep fitter than you do. Well, not any dog I ever had, but, you know, maybe his dogs, but not my dogs. They just kind of laid around and got fat. But then he talks about cats, how cats stretch. And he said, I thought of the superb bodily fitness of animals. I studied them to see how they kept themselves in condition. I watched the caged beasts in the zoo. All these animals had about the same habits. They didn't bother about their legs, but they were always stretching and twisting and turning their bodies, their trunks. They used the floors of their cages and their bars to furnish resistance. They pushed and turned and twisted. So what he was talking about came to be known in the 70s and 80s as isometric exercises, using the body weight, just the body weight itself. And the twisting of the body to stretch the tendons. The tensing exercises that he discusses emphasize the fact that the principal muscles of the body are arranged in opposing sets, one being used to push out, the other to pull in, the limb portion of the body. Therefore, in the tensing exercises, as in the stretching exercises, there's found an alternate extension or stretching and a tensing or coordination of the muscles. They proceed according to the same general principles and seek for the same general results. I shall not attempt to give you a series of stretching exercises in this lesson. You have but to use your own common sense and imagination a little to devise one for yourself. Carry in mind the general directions, viz., stretch and then contract each muscle, part, or limb. Keep in mind the words and their accompanying action, stretch, contract, twist, bend, wriggle, shake. By doing this, you will work out a good system for yourself. Or rather, your instinctive subconscious mind will work out one for you, just as those of the animals have worked out one for them. By shaking yourself, I mean an action akin to that performed by a big dog when he shakes from his hide the water which has accumulated on it by reason of his plunge into the stream or lake. In the above stated form of exercising, in any other form you may prefer, or using connection with it, you should always be careful to throw mind into the work. As I have pointed out to you before, unless you do this, you'll have the mere form without the life and spirit of the thing. Moreover, by throwing mind into it, you also create and maintain an interest in the work, obtaining an actual feeling of pleasure from it, just as the animals do. And then he talks about the art of resting, and he says you should rest as a cat does. And he talks about how the yogis do this. The yogis tell you to look at a cat. He says take the reposing cat. He says, the teachers point out the cat crouching before a mouse hole is an object lesson of efficient relaxation combined with available power. And I think that's a very good thing to keep in mind. The cat before the mouse hole is an example of available power. We'll talk about resting at another time. But take this to point. Most people that I know of dread exercise, and they try to keep their mind away from it. And you just go to the gym to see this. You see people exercising with their earbuds in, listening to something, and or watching the television, and their mind is on everything else but the exercise. And what possible benefit is this? Exercise has a spirituality to it, and the spirituality of exercise is you find a form of meditation. And by putting body and spirit into the exercise, you find a nutrition in it. There's a nutrient in the exercise. And this is what Mr. Conlon is trying to tell us, that exercise is not isolated to the gym. I remember reading Castaneda, reading Don Juan, and Don Juan, every time he stood up, Castaneda noticed he stretched. And so the stretching, this maintaining limberness, this vitality, keeping this mindfulness of your body, it seems important. I believe that we're detached, we're disassociated from our own bodies. We don't know what we're putting into it. We don't know what we're getting out of it. And I wanted to point out something about the chewing also that I neglected last week. We don't know what we're eating. We're not mindful of our food. And I just watch the world, and I remember something that one of our a long time ago, one of our Buddhist teachers told us. He said, you know, be aware of what you're eating. He said, Buddha never taught being a vegetarian. Now, there's arguments about that, the Suranga Nagata Sutra and stuff, but one of the things you have to realize is that every bite of food that you eat comes with suffering attached, even a grain of rice. And a great deal of suffering comes attached. Even if you're a vegetarian, there's a loss of life. There's a loss of life to it. There's a great deal of suffering. And if you consider the amount of sweat that goes into a bean or a grain of rice, don't waste it and be grateful for it and contemplate that and eat with gratitude. There should be gratitude in every bite you take. If you eat meat, you know, I'll tell you, there's nothing angrier than vegan forums. I was a moderator on a vegetarian forum, on a Buddhist forum, and that was the angriest forum on the Buddha, e-sangha. I don't know if any of you remember e-sangha. I was the chief administrator of that for a long time, of the vegetarian forum, and that was the hottest forum on there. It got out of control. We were suspending people right and left because the vegetarians versus the vegans. The vegans thought the vegetarians weren't going far enough. Then the omnivores would get on, and the vegetarians and the omnivores would be bitterly, this was on a Buddhist forum, mind you. Did Buddha eat meat? Did he not? You know, you're a monster if you eat meat. And the angriest ones were the vegans. Man, God help you if you were a vegetarian, you weren't good enough. You ate eggs, you drank milk, you're a monster. This was anger, such attachment to views. But the bottom line is, whatever you eat, be grateful for it and understand that someone had to plant that food, someone had to harvest that food, someone had to bring it to your table. The amount of work to bring a single grain of rice to your plate is immense. And people casually eat food, casually throw it away. It breaks my heart if I have to throw food away. If I neglect food in my refrigerator and it goes bad and I have to throw it away, I grieve. I really do. I grieve. I mourn. And you can ask my lady about that. I say, I'll eat food that's gone over the edge. I will. If it's gone over the edge, I'll smell it and I go, you know, this is over the edge. Maybe I shouldn't eat it, but I'll eat it before I throw it away. I hate to throw food away. It's because I know the amount. I'm mindful of the amount of suffering that goes into every piece of food. And so chew your food. Be mindful of it. Don't be absent of it. And the same goes for your body. Don't take your body for granted either. And if you exercise, it should be a spiritual thing. I think this is the sort of thing Mr. Conlon is trying to teach us, that everything is a spiritual act. And eating is a spiritual act. Exercising is a spiritual act. The amount of effort... we have a question. Sweat is an indicator of suffering. Some sweat is, man. I tell you... Nagasiva, when I had to dig a post hole to put my mailbox post in, I dug 6 feet through rocky ground. That sweat was definitely suffering. Sweat is not always an indicator of suffering, but I'll tell you that in bringing food to your table, there is death and suffering. When you plant food, there's a loss of life. They're planting and harvesting food. There's going to be a loss of life. There's going to be insects, worms. There's going to be birds killed. There's going to be rabbits killed. There's going to be everything killed. You know, the metaphor I always tell you: you look out on a sunny day, you're enjoying that sunny day. You say, "Oh my gosh, look at the beautiful lake. Look at the beautiful trees. Look at the beautiful bush. 1 inch under that surface, everything's busily killing and eating everything else." It's a horror story, and nature's a horror story. And that's just the way it is. You can't live without death. Death is all around us. So, you know, love life, man. Love life. Suffering is omnipresent. That's first noble truth. Suffering is omnipresent. You can't get around it. You know, pain is inevitable. Suffering is optional. But that's another lesson. Day for another lesson. So we have this entire outlook of bringing your mind into everything you do. Don't disconnect your mind from it. And so I will tell you, you know, as I said, I was a fat kid. I was, in fact, the fat kid. And as I grew up, I became more mindful of what I was doing. And I decided, you know, I don't have to be this way. And then again, I'll tell you that I put on a lot of weight when I was an adult, and that grew out of, and this whole show connects together, that grew out of grief. And when I addressed the grief, I dropped the weight. You can find this whole story, by the way, on my website, on my reduction blog. There's a little link that says how I lost 90 pounds. Actually, that link is outdated because I lost closer to, I went from 325 to around 200, so I lost 125 pounds, and that was in the 90s, and I've kept it off, so it's been a long time since I've been that large. But once I dealt with the reason behind it, there it was. So these habits that we have that are self-destructive, and, you know, carrying 125 pounds is nothing more than self-destruction. It is a self-destructive habit. Stem from a spiritual misunderstanding, and if you bring your mind into it, the mind will heal it. So what Mr. Collin is telling us here is that bring spirituality to everything you do, and I do recommend you do this. I was talking about this book, The New Rules of Lifting. It has a very sensible approach to lifting weights, and I'll tell you, the best way to burn fat is not running. The best way to burn fat is lean muscle mass. If you increase lean muscle mass, you become a fat burning machine. You don't have to do these 7-minute weird workouts. You don't have to do the Richard Simmons is dancing to the oldies, although that's fun, but do something you enjoy. Find something you enjoy. I personally enjoy lifting weights. I think it's great. I think it's a fun thing to do. And I can't wait till my rotator cuff heals up so I can go back to doing it. I think it's humiliating for a guy like me to be doing a workout, which I'm doing with my left arm, with a 5-pound barbell. It's humiliating, but it feels good to have a 5-pound weight in my hand, even though it's a weight. But it's kind of humiliating to me when I used to do that with 50 pounds, and now I've got 5 pounds. But it's a start. And I want to tell you the secret to weightlifting, if you decide to do it, is slow and steady wins that race. Don't do yourself an injury. But it is a wonderful thing to do. That's, I think, what I wanted to cover with Mr. Conlon. Next week, I think we're going to talk about breathing, and we're going to talk about mental healing. Now, if you need help with things like this, I'm going to tell you that there's a couple of things that are closely related. I think that eating and other habits like that are easily deflected. Smoking is a personal bugaboo of mine. Both my parents died of smoking-related illnesses, emphysema and lung cancer, respectively. And I have treatments for that on my website. In fact, I have a kit. There's hypnosis CDs that you listen to, combined with Mojo bags, completely designed for both weight loss and one for smoking. It's a kit. You get a hypnosis CD and a Mojo bag combined. You have the Mojo bag, and then you listen to the CD every day, every night, or every day for 21 days, and it's a treatment with one for weight loss and one for smoking. These are two personal, very personal bugs in my ear that I've designed a program for, and you can go look at it. We have a link. What happened to Isanga? You know, what happened to Isanga, I can tell you, we were, the server was cyberbombed. It was infected with some kind of virus that destroyed it. And, it was malware. Is that what it's called? Malware? somebody uploaded some malware onto the server, and it just destroyed the database, and it was impossible to retrieve the database. And Leo, who was the owner of it, decided there was no point in it. He had moved on and left the database to the administrators, and the administrators, of whom I was one, decided it wasn't worth it. It was too expensive and not worth the time to retrieve it, and it just went away. Usanga is now replaced by Dharma Wheel, for those who want to explore it. There's the Dhamma Wheel and Dharma Wheel, its sister site for Mahayana. Dhamma is for Theravada, Dharma is for Mahayana. But Usanga in his time was a wonderful and beautiful thing. It was the Internet's largest multi-denominational Buddhist discussion forum. In its time, it was a beautiful thing. Then it had internal problems, but, you know, we'll not go into that right now. So let's move on. Healing with crystals, which is, of course, what we are with the Crystal Silence League. We talk about the practical applications of crystals. So I'd like to talk to you now about that, and let's go on for that. And I would like to move on. I want to pull up some notes here. Okay. Crystals have been used for a very long time with healing, and there's many theories about how to do it, but what I'd like to talk to you about is using it with chakras. And we discussed chakras so long ago, and I'd like to let's talk about that a little bit. Probably the most common reference today with chakras is Kundalini yoga, and when I was studying yoga and stuff, I became very interested in what role chakras played in crystal ball work. And as it turns out, it does play quite a significant one. Chakras, if you don't know, are energy nodes or vortexes located along the central channel of the etheric body, or maybe even the physical body. It depends on who you ask. And now, chakra means wheel or circle, and is generally depicted as a round object with petals. And so in some Buddhist systems, there are several thousand chakras. And in some systems, there are chakras that are under your arm and under your chin and along the lines and everywhere. But mostly, what most people are familiar with are seven chakras that go along from the top of the head to the to your butt, basically, you know, where you sit. And in Tibetan Buddhism, the circle is being referred to as dual meaning. The practitioner reflects on the circle of existence and rebirth as well. Now, there's no matter which system you look at in the world, there are certain commonalities in chakras. They're energy pools or wheels or vortexes, and they have petals. There's always chakras that are along the central axis or channel of the body. There's usually mantras that are associated with the chakras. You can control or experience and develop the chakras with practice. Usually there are colors associated with the chakras, psychological traits, emotional qualities, and very convenient for crystal workers, classical elements are often associated with chakras. Now, the purpose of the chakras is very complex, and you can get into very, very deep systems when you study chakras, especially if you get into Tibetan dream yoga. But one function that's very commonly practiced is to help filter how we experience the world and even store our responses to these various experiences. So if the chakra is truly an energy vortex, it's a whirlpool, a very powerful whirlpool that draws in emotional energy and even emotional experiences from our environment and holds it. It doesn't allow it to escape, which could be an explanation why we harbor these emotions, both positive and negative, for a long time after you have a powerful experience. These whirlpools suck them in. And that's also why you physically experience emotions. You know, there's two factors, there are two aspects of emotion. There's physical and mental. or physical and emotional. It's redundant to say there's an emotional component to emotion. But, you know, think about it. There's physical, there's a physical reaction. Think about fear as a physical reaction and a mental reaction. You know, think about love, physical and mental. Think about pain, physical and mental. So there's two aspects of it. So we store it physically, we store it mentally. Another function of the chakra is it may act as a gate, allowing certain types of experiential energy into our awareness according to that specific function. You know, for example, somebody with a low functioning, a underactive or blocked heart chakra might have difficulty even experiencing love. And if you can activate or bring that heart chakra up to functioning, they're more able to experience love. Someone with a blocked root chakra might seem lost. They just can't connect. They can't get grounded, unable to fend for themselves. And if you can open that root chakra, they're able to ground, able to connect, able to ground and fend for themselves better. Now, the Western yogic tradition, which is derived, of course, from Hindu yoga, identifies seven chakras, and they're associated with a specific color, and they're located in alignment from the base of the spine to the top of the head. So we have the root chakra at the very bottom, the sacral chakra just below the navel, solar plexus chakra in the pit of the stomach, the heart chakra in the middle of the chest, the throat chakra in the throat, and the third eye in the forehead, and, of course, the crown chakra at the top of the head. Each of these are related to emotional and physical experiences. So when these are underactive or hyperactive, they create, according to the theory, emotional and sometimes physical conditions. The idea is to have them operating in a balanced state. These chakras can be balanced through the use of crystals. So there are three additional chakras that some practitioners recognize: the soul chakra above the head, the spirit chakra above that, and the earth chakra below the feet. And we may get into that at some point, but you know, for now, let's deal with the human body. So the chakras can be imbalanced since these are along the channel of the body, and they're filters or gates of experience. If they're not working properly, the experience of reality can be distorted. Emotional and physical symptoms can arise from underactive or overactive or otherwise malfunctioning chakras. So there are many ways to heal and realign, balance, many ways to do this. Treatments involve diet. You know, there's the yogic diets. Ayurveda medicine often tells you about diet. Aromatherapy, meditation, massage, Reiki. Reiki is very big on chakra. Did I tell you about the day that I met six different Reiki practitioners in a one-hour period? I'll tell you about that sometime. Treatments involving diet, essential oils are used with good results. Crystals, important role in balancing, realigning chakra. Diagnosing whether the chakras are overactive or underactive is fairly simple because there are specific symptoms associated with these areas. Since each chakra relates in some way to the mental and emotional state, it's sort of like the way everything else is diagnosed, diagnostically through symptoms. So you basically have a list. You have a list. You go by the root chakra imbalances. It can produce problems in the legs and feet, knees, lower back, lower digestive system, immune system, and genitals. That's the physical symptoms. Now, emotional problems usually manifest as insecurities involving money, shelter, trust, security. So if you balance this, it helps with the self-confidence and the feeling of being rooted and grounded, which is cool. Sacral chakra, which, remember, it's below your navel, that's sexual and reproductive issues, urinary problems, kidney dysfunction, hip, pelvic, low back pain. The emotional imbalances include problems committing to relationships and expressing feelings, acting spontaneously, blocked creativity, inability to experience pleasure, anhedonia, that's called, sexual hang-ups, fears of impotence and betrayal, addiction problems. And when you balance that out, we have an ability to take risks, and, be more creative, stay committed to a course of action, and you become more passionate and able to express your love in relationships. The solar plexus chakra, you know, that's in the pit of your stomach, digestive problems, liver, stomach, pancreas, gallbladder, colon, it can contribute to high blood pressure and diabetes sometimes. The emotional problems can include low self-esteem, fear of rejection, feelings of alienation, ennui. When the chakra is balanced, self-esteem is raised and self-acceptance can be restored to health, and feelings of control and assertiveness are restored. Heart chakra imbalances can include asthma, all kinds of other lung problems, heart disease, breast, upper back, shoulder, arm, wrist problems. The emotional issues are codependency, jealousy, anger, passive aggressiveness, abandonment fears, you know, all that emotional mess. And with this chakra's balance, feelings of happiness, gratitude, emotional balance, love, trust become restored. The throat chakra imbalances include sore throat and laryngitis, ear infections, teeth grinding, especially that TMJ thing, you know, where the jaw gets locked up, thyroid problems. Emotional issues can include communication problems, especially when speaking the truth. Throat chakra people have a tendency to confabulate. When the chakra is in balance, words flow freely and clearly. Third eye chakra imbalances include headaches, sinus problems, eye strain, loss of hearing. Emotional imbalances can include moodiness, fantasy-prone thinking, narcissism. You know, this chakra balances wisdom, clear thinking, insight. Crown chakra imbalances include depression, mental fogginess, delusions, sensitivity to light and sound. You see, the higher up you go, you start to get more and more into the mental and emotional realms, higher vibrational disorders. Emotional issues can include prejudice, religious or political extremism, intolerance, rigid thinking of all kinds. And when the chakra is balanced, it inspires a more tolerant, open-minded attitude. So you see, these are very easy to spot. You have to be half psychologist and half half psychic, I guess, half mystic, half psychologist. So most of us usually have more than one chakra out of tune. When any chakra is blocked, overactive or underactive, the other chakras sometimes try to compensate. So therefore, chakra balancing treatments may need to be applied to several, if not every, chakra point. So now we get to the idea of balancing of crystals and crystal balls. So different sets of crystals are believed to harmonize with each chakra. You can find this information everywhere. Whenever you see a crystal, it says these crystals work with specific chakras. But how do you do it? You know, that's the thing. What's the mechanics with it? Well, there's many different ways, many different theories, and I guess there's as many different ways of doing it as there are practitioners. Each chakra harmonizes with a different color. This becomes interesting, very interesting, when you practice with tinted crystal balls. All that's necessary sometimes is just bring the appropriate crystal near the imbalanced chakra, and there'll be a noticeable improvement in the related issue. It's kind of like tuning a piano. You bring the tuning fork to the key, you know, to the string. The tuning fork goes, you bring it to the string, and it goes, and you go, okay, I just have to twist it a little bit. More often, treatment takes more time and sometimes several sessions before the, for lack of a better word, disharmonious chakra is back in tune. So to balance or realign a chakra, you place an appropriate healing crystal near or over the chakra point. And, for example, if treating the heart chakra, you might choose rose quartz or pink tourmaline or a bloodstone, or you might place all three in a ring around the chakra point. And you'll recall that each chakra is associated with a color. So when in doubt, what stone to use, match the color of the stone with the color associated with the chakra. And, gosh, you can make a list of them. You can have a working list. One of the things I do, I have different colored little bags, you know, red, yellow, blue, green. I've got stones in each bag. So, for instance, earth chakra, you can use black and brown stones, obsidian, onyx, lodestone, magnetite, and a little black crystal ball. In the root chakra, there's red and black stones, ruby, red jasper, onyx, obsidian, hematite, fire agate, and a little red crystal ball. You know, you go down the list, you can just do that. Have a little collection of them. And when you get higher up, you're using stones of higher vibration. If you get to the third eye chakra, you got dark blue and purple and indigo stones. purple kyanite, purple fluorite, kunzite, apatite, and you work with an indigo or dark blue crystal ball, crown chakra, violet stones, amethyst, alexandrite. If you use amethyst, use a really good one, the darker amethyst, alexandrite, shugalite, white stones such as moonstone, selenite, calcite. Got a violet or amethyst crystal ball, a white crystal ball. The soul chakras, you know, the ones that are over your head, white stones, clear or white crystal ball, moonstones, things like that. So you make a set, you make a healing set if you want to do this kind of work. Now, the best crystals I found for chakra work are flat and smooth and about an inch or two in diameter, round stones. These can be placed directly over the chakra and allowed to rest for a long period without worrying about them rolling off. And except for the crown chakra, it's easiest done while you're lying down. And I also like to make a ring of three or more crystals around a chakra if I feel it needs a stronger treatment. And if you make a serious study of crystals, you need to learn these stones, even in the same color, have subtle nuances of each crystal and stone. There are differences even between yellow stones. Sunstone and calcite have subtle differences. So there are many books available that list the crystals and their traditional properties, so you can get a crystal encyclopedia. Keep on hand for easy reference. If you make a serious study, you need one of these. So what I'm about to say now may cause traditional crystal workers to burn me in effigy, but I'm going to say it. In my opinion, colored crystal balls may in some ways be superior to crystals and stones when working with chakras. And I'll explain why I feel this way. Crystal balls come in every color of the spectrum, and if you're going to use crystal balls to balance chakras, you need seven of them. You need seven 2-inch balls, one for each color of the chakra points, and one black ball to absorb the negative energies before you begin. And if you're a purist, the balls don't have to be glass, but they can be turned from real crystals and stones. So you can combine the best. You can combine the best of the two. But in my opinion, this could be an artificial distinction. Glass is fused silica, the same as quartz and obsidian. And the substances used to tint glass are usually mineral in origin. Citrine, for example, citrine is rock quartz. It's no different than rock quartz. Citrine is rock quartz, but it's got a warm yellow glow due to iron inclusions. And usually, a yellow crystal ball is tinted with iron. So what's the difference? You have rock quartz, which is silica with iron, or you have a yellow crystal ball, which is silica with iron. So we only have a few minutes left, and I want to leave you with that. The treatment is you select a color ball which harmonizes with the chakra's color, and you're starting at the center of the chakra point. Roll the ball gently with your palm over the area of the chakra in gradually increasing circles. When you reach the perimeter of the chakra, reverse directions and roll it back in, and you repeat as you feel necessary. And the reason I prefer the ball over the rough or tumbled crystal, the round shape, the rolling motion, and the constant contact of the sphere between your hand and the body maximizes the healing transfer of energy. And now, if you want a very advanced technique, project your suggestions using the techniques of induction via your crystal ball, and then transfer this energy, rolling the ball over an appropriate chakra. This projected energy would usually be in the form of healing and balancing codes. You might project into a pink sphere. Your heart is open and ready for love and friendship. You're brave and confident in meeting new people and initiating romantic relationships. And roll this ball over the heart chakra. Next week, more on healing chakras and more on detoxing with a black crystal ball. We'll continue our discussion of healing and probably segue to something else. May you be blessed. You know, thanks for showing up. And do go to www.crystalsilenceleague.org. Thanks. Bye-bye.